Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 11 of Cinemental.
Now this I can do.
I can't compete with you physically, and you're no match for my brains.
I don't give a crap if you covered yourself in peanut butter and had a 15-hooker gangbang.
All right, so this is another one of those cases where we just lost track of time talking with our guest. This week, writer and Top Cow president Matt Hawkins joined us to discuss one of his favorite films, The Shawshank Redemption. And by the time we had gotten to his guilty pleasure choice, we were already 2 hours in. So with some creative editing, we've managed to produce this second episode for his guilty pleasure film, The Hidden. Unfortunately, Matt's phone died before we could get to the poster discussion, but he's certainly there for the entire discussion of the film itself. We hope you dig this slightly shorter than usual episode, and if you would like to hear Matt's full introduction, just jump back to episode 10 and listen to the first few minutes. I mean, if you already haven't listened to episode 10, but I'm sure you have, right? Enjoy. So we do a little segment here, Matt, called News That Gives Us Fits.
Move!
Hassan, what do you got?
Apparently, according to Scuttlebutt, Ben Affleck is going to be Batman again on a TV show for HBO Max. So they say.
How much Batman? Is it like a Batman show, or is he just going to be like, he's going to show up?
They don't really, the information isn't that complete. It's just a...
So they've just kind of locked him down for it.
Well, you know what? There's not even any certainty in that. It's just a rumor that's going around, but it's a persistent one. My fit is if it's true, then DC just really just does not have a handle on what it's doing. Because they just committed to three new Batman movies with Patterson. They had a really good thing, in my opinion, with Ben Affleck. Now, I understand Ben Affleck's health wasn't that great. And he wasn't that happy with some of the machinations at Warner Brothers. So okay, yep. So that just fell apart. That's fine. That's no one engineered that. But in their constant quest to compete with Marvel, they refuse to kind of pioneer something for themselves. You know, they just keep dropping the ball on making something special that is uniquely DC. You know, for the DC universe, or they're great with television. They're all over the television.
Yeah, but that's all Greg Berlanti.
Yes. So they just cannot get this cinematic. And you think Warner Brothers, who've been making movies since God set fire to the sun, right? You'd think that they could somehow regulate this in some way to get some kind of university or universality out of the whole thing. But they just don't seem to be able to. I loved Affleck's Batman. I think he's one of my favorites out of all the Batmen that there have been. And I would love to see him again, but it's just making me crazy not to be able to lock down a narrative for whatever they want their universe to be. Is it a universe, or is it just a whole bunch of separate movies that just happen to intersect briefly? Or is it just throw whatever sticks to the wall and we'll go with that? It's crazy.
I feel like DC's biggest, I don't want to say problem or an issue even, but the biggest obstacle, let's say, is that if you're comparing them to the Marvel and the MCU and the success that they've seen, but if you go back and look at those early MCU films, they were successful, but they weren't billion-dollar movies.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But the thing is they laid out a road plan and they stuck to it. And they built every single one of those on everything that came before, and they stuck with it.
Right.
DC launches something new and it doesn't blow up the world immediately, and they immediately drop it to start something new.
Yeah.
It's like they're world building, but they're only world building
well
every
They're like jumping from planet to planet. They're not staying on a planet long enough to terraform it and actually build a world.
They're at a disadvantage though at this point, because like say you
very much so.
You decide to do something. You build a shed, right? You don't have anybody telling you how the shed should look, what the shed should be, how quick you should build it, anything like that. You've built it at your own leisure. The shed is wonderfully constructed, makes everybody in your neighborhood decide they also need a shed. Right. But now everybody is rushing to try to emulate the greatness of your shed, as well as trying to get it done in the time frame that you were able to get yours done at, and at the cost that you were able to do. But now they're behind the market, right? Because the market is changed. It's altered by the existence of your shed in the first place. So they were already behind the eight ball. When they try to emulate the formula, the only thing they could do wisely would be to create a formula of their own. But they, you know, nobody knows how to do that in Hollywood, you know, seemingly.
Well, and the thing is yes, you can argue back and forth that, you know, Avi Arad has been at Marvel for a long time and sowed the seeds that allowed Kevin Feige to go in and build this universe.
Right.
But I refuse to believe that in all the years that DC has been around and everyone that they cross paths with, that you couldn't have had that same kind of, you know, and regardless of how you feel about the guy, I feel like with all of Jeff Loeb's experience at the time, I think that he could have very easily been the guy to set those seeds and to get that ball rolling and then hand it off to a TV or movie guy to really kind of just, you know, guide it moving forward.
Right.
You know, I feel like that, you know, even if you go back to the time when Iron Man and the first Hulk and the original Hulk film came out, you know, if they had done something similar at that time, I don't think that they would necessarily be as successful.
No.
But, and that's just because their universe tends to be it. I mean, let's just be honest. The Marvel universe and the DC universe are different. Yeah. They feel different. There, it's a different people who are one and not the other. It's right. It's a matter of taste.
Their heroes
it's a matter
way
of
more ethereal based, you know, like.
But yeah. Do you want to hear Stan Lee's explanation of the difference between the DC and the Marvel universe?
Absolutely.
That he is quoted as saying the difference between the Marvel universe is that the DC universe is a bunch of gods pretending to be men, and the Marvel universe is a bunch of men pretending to be gods. And when you think about it that way, it makes so much fucking sense.
Right?
Just passing on some wisdom from the master.
Yeah, and you can't.
Well, it's interesting, too, because if you look at the idea of a man pretending to be a god, there's so much more room for that character, for his arc to travel in so many other directions, as opposed to a god pretending to be a man.
Superman. Yeah. Superman is the most overrated character of all time.
I've always felt about Superman that he was probably one of the more difficult ones to write, because for me personally, I thought that I could never read more than a few Superman books in a row before I just got bored. There's only so much you can go at him with.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's an immortal god. You know, he's a guy who survived the apocalypse, had the best parents of all time, and conveniently landed in a farm of the best step parents or foster parents of all time, you know, and Jesus Christ, can we have a more convenient series of fucking shit for a character to be developed into this godlike character? And oh, by the way, he's a god, but he has one minor Achilles heel, and it's this kryptonite that no one knows what it is.
They can hardly get their hands on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like saying, hey, you know, uranium, it's bad for me, you know? So FYI, that's my kryptonite.
Yeah.
Where the fuck are you going to get it? You know what I mean? I mean, are you going to know where to go get some uranium? I don't think you are. So
what's the first movie in the DC expanded universe?
It was a Man of Steel. Supposedly.
Man of Steel. Yeah. Man of Steel is supposed to be the first one. And Iron Man is the first one in Marvel, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's your problem. I mean, Iron Man's a fantastic film, and I haven't, from what you guys have said, Man of Steel is not the greatest thing, right?
Iron Man A+, Man of Steel fucking ass.
Wow, that really? That big of a disparity? So, wow.
No, dude, Iron Man, the Iron Man film is so amazing. I love it.
It's one of my three favorite Marvel films, easily.
Well, and it's, you know, Feige and those guys, they looked at the situation and they didn't have access to X-Men. They didn't have access to Spider-Man. X-Men was at Fox, you know, Spider-Man was at Sony. So they had to go to second and third tier characters to do stuff. And I was surprised because they did Iron Man, they did Thor, and these were always second and third tier Marvel characters. And they did them so well that it almost outshone the first tier Marvel characters.
Nobody's even talking about the X-Men anymore. So, I mean, you know, as a viable number one entity, as opposed to the Avengers, you know? So you're absolutely right about that.
Good point.
That's amazing when you think about it. I mean, that's like unparalleled, unbelievable, because for how many decades were the X-Men like the shit?
Yeah.
You know, X-Men and Spider-Man were the Marvel characters.
Arguably all the 80s and 90s.
Two solid decades, you know? Of that being their flagship book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Cartoons, animated shows. I mean, two cartoons, as a matter of fact. A bunch of ancillary stuff, video games before even the movies. There were a number of X-Men video games. And I mean, what did they have? Like seven movies? How many did Fox do? Five? Six?
Dark Phoenix was, I think, seven.
Yes,
or eight.
Seven movies at least. Right?
You mean just X-Men movies?
Just X-Men, yeah.
Are you counting Wolverine?
Not counting Wolverine.
Not even counting the Wolverine.
Oh, not counting Wolverine. X-Men X2, X3, no. Days of Future Past.
First Class,
that shitty one, and the other shitty
one. Age of Apocalypse.
You're going to be more specific. I think you mean Apocalypse.
Age of Apocalypse.
No, and then, I actually and really Phoenix. Adored that one. Oh, no, wait, I didn't. That one's off.
So that's what you really think. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I didn't see seven? Dark Phoenix.
And Dark Phoenix.
That's how much interest I lost in that franchise. I didn't even see Dark Phoenix. So.
Me either. I never saw it. I've seen every other X-Men movie in the theater. I did not
Have see you Dark seen Phoenix. It, Hassan?
I saw Dark Phoenix.
Have you seen it?
Me too.
Is it
Shame I on did. You.
Is it good?
It's not great.
It's not great, but it's not bad.
It's nowhere
not as bad as
it's nowhere near as it's nowhere near as bad as they everyone made it out to be.
No, I but didn't it's feel and it's better than Age of Apocalypse, which was
Age
just
of
not
Apocalypse?
A good movie.
Is that what that's called?
Yeah, that
no,
was
it's just
a,
called
that
Apocalypse.
Was one just, right.
It's just X-Men Apocalypse.
Is it okay?
You want it to be Age of Apocalypse?
Yeah, what is, I wish it was Age of Apocalypse.
Age of Apocalypse
that would make
is
it even
great
Age of
better.
Apocalypse
that's
is
a better title.
2020. It's the year 2020. Yeah. That's what we're living in now. But the best thing about Dark Phoenix, and probably the most unfortunate thing, is that we're at movie seven, maybe six or seven, and that's kind of the first time in the entire series that we get to see in the climax of the film one superpowered team against an equally superpowered team, and then we also get to see the X-Men working in tandem with each other in, you know, utilizing their powers, because they've copped out on that for almost the entire series. And it was,
there were brief skirmishes here and there, but never any of just man on man battles.
Exactly. So that was the only, and that sequence, even though it's a ridiculous sequence and those aliens were supposed to be Skrulls and they couldn't do that because of Captain Marvel and a number of other things. So they're fighting these really generic aliens, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at least the sequence was exciting, you know. At least it was a well-done, exciting sequence with a lot of special effects. The movie in itself is not a bad film. It's just too little, too late. And it's a redux of another film in that same series. And they make the same mistakes again that they had made in the original Dark Phoenix. Whatever, X-3. X-Men 3, right? Yeah. X-Men, yeah.
X3, yeah.
So it's not worth it.
Yeah. And I think that's partially just it finally came down to, you know, how many more people is Simon Kinberg going to drag into that franchise to just let, you know, give free reign to do what he wants. So he just said, I'm going to do it myself. You know, even if I fail, I'm still not going to be probably derided as much as the guy who did Apocalypse. So
no, and I've met with Simon a few times in person, and I can tell you that guy's a fan. he's a legit fan. He can sit there and geek out on comics. Yeah. And those are the Hollywood people I like the most. Which is like when they actually know the history of it a little bit, it makes it cool.
Which is probably why we got our fight. You know, we got our you know, because that was that end sequence was like reading a comic book. You know, it was a set piece like a comic book. But anyway, that was my news.
Okay.
Right on. Lay. Ready Player Two. Did you see the announcement today?
Yeah. The problem I have with that is I know, I'm sorry, I just have a problem with everything. No, I mean, it took me forever to read Ready Player One. Like everyone read it, then I finally read it. And I'm sorry, but it's a great concept, a brilliant concept. But the two problems I have with it are all the copyright stuff is very gray area. And I'm sorry, if you're not that guy writing that book, you're going to get your ass sued. And I hate hypocrisy like that in the entertainment industry. But secondly, beyond all that, is the book is written like an instruction manual. It's not well written. I mean, I'll say, I just wrote this on a thread about half an hour before the show. I mean, but it's a great idea. The guy is not a good writer. He's not a good writer. He struck gold by accident. He came up with a great idea. And I mean, for goodness sake, the world's premier filmmaker took it, nearly ruined it. And, you know, I mean, I'm not that excited for the sequel personally.
Okay.
It's a novel. I mean, the sequel's a novel they announced, not a new movie.
The novel,
right?
Correct. Okay. Correct, but it won't be far behind.
Right. Yeah. Well,
I'm sure the movie rights will be sold before the
Did
book.
Did anyone
is
else
out,
read
now
the
that
book?
The book's been
Any
announced.
Read the book?
Spielberg, Max Spielberg probably already owns it.
I think we've probably all read it.
I read.
I read half of it. I didn't finish it.
Why do you think that Ernest Cline had some sort of secret sauce to not get sued by using those characters in his book? I don't think he was anybody before he wrote that book.
I do actually know a little bit of the legal on this.
Oh, cool.
If you want me to share my knowledge.
Please do.
His book fell into fair use and was not allowed to be sued on that. But the film, everything used in the film was approved.
And signed because off. It was Spielberg. Right.
Correct. Oh, that's what you meant. Not Ernest Cline. You meant Spielberg making the movie.
Spielberg, no, everything used in the movie was approved. There's no way anyone uses anything in a massive film release that's not 100% approved.
Right. So in a book, you can reference any bit of pop culture you want as long as you don't make it a character.
It's not that simple. Fair use is a complex legal.
It's about as gray as you get.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. I mean,
nobody
knows that.
I'm not a lawyer. It mostly boils down to you can use it if you're not going to make money off of it. If you're not going to profit from the utilization of it, then you could pretty much do what you want.
That's the whole selling point of a book, though.
Right.
I mean, that's the whole
concept. From my limited understanding of it, it can't be fair use that they use in order to.
It wasn't.
Yeah, okay. Because obviously that movie was made for profit. A lot of people got paid to make it and got paid to right. You know, so yeah, it's something else.
Look, Spawn is in the film. I do know. So there's characters from Image that are used in the film. So all those characters were signed off on and people were compensated or agreed to their free use.
It had to be the most time too. What other movie comes even close to that?
Oh, nothing.
I mean,
nothing. And there were things that they couldn't get. I know that there was some stuff that they could actually, that people wouldn't sign off on to be in the film. And so they couldn't use them.
Right.
Well, there was almost no Marvel stuff. It was all DC.
Right.
Really?
You know, so I mean, if you look at it, it was a lot of, you see a lot of comic book characters, but then when you start looking at it, you're like, oh, it's all the DC characters.
Right.
My biggest issue with that book, and it's not really an issue really at all, but it wouldn't work on anybody but people from our generation. You know, it's got a limited shelf life, you know, so once we are no longer viable consumers, that book is that entire property will really have no impact.
You could update it, though.
I think you're wrong. You want to know why?
Why is that?
Because I think that we ourselves from the generation that references that basically from where the term pop culture finds itself. Sure. I think that we are, in fact, expanding the world of pop culture to the extent that pop culture isn't pop culture a ubiquitous term. It actually defines a certain period to an extent.
Okay.
Yes, pop culture can be applied to anything that's popular in a culture at a given time. But when you sit, when everybody's references in our age bracket references, oh, it's got a ton of pop culture references, they're immediately going to think that you're talking about 80s, 90s.
Okay.
Right. That right. sort of window. And I think that we as a group of creators are working
to expand,
consistently to reinforce that as a living thing. And it's not just going to be left by the wayside. Like no more than film noir is.
Okay.
You know, film noir still exists. You know, it's not, you know, black and white detective, you know, hard boiled crime thrillers aren't the thing that happened today, but you can still go watch as many of them as you want because they made a shit ton of them.
I agree with everything you said as pertains to things like, say, Stranger Things and, to use your reference, a shit ton of other recently made things that reference that era. And even if a lot of the people from today don't exactly know the nature of the nostalgia, they can extrapolate an image of what it was like to grow up in the 80s from some of this material. The reason I kind of differ on Ready Player One is because there's no context behind most of the references that are being made, right?
That's true.
So there's no context about, you know, the Acura motorcycle, or maybe even the DeLorean. Maybe you've seen Back to the Future, so maybe you know that's the DeLorean. But there are a number of things that only people from our era would understand, you know, as in context, because there's no correlation. There's no flesh applied to any of it other than just, you know, like fan service, like a flash in the pan.
It's all novelty. So that's a great point.
Yeah.
It's all novelty. And that's.
So I agree with you, Steve, that yes, the 80s pop culture is becoming, because nostalgia in general is becoming a genre in and of itself. So even people who were not born in the 80s and or even the 90s can at least understand what the nostalgia is, and it's become a genre right. in itself. So their nostalgia now will be stuff that they watched growing up that were products of our nostalgia, and it's a complete jambalaya of right. of that kind of stuff. But I think Ready Player One uniquely, because there's no context given to any of those references, is going to fall with a thud in future generations, because no one's going to know what the heck is going on in that movie. Think about that movie if you don't understand the 80s. What would you do with all that visual stimuli? You have no idea what any of this stuff means.
Right.
Here's as the father of a 20 and an 18-year-old son, okay, I would tell you, my sons are both huge fans of the 80s. And it's weird to me, but the reason why they're huge fans of the 80s is because of fucking Guitar Hero and Rock Star. They play these goddamn video games, and they love the music, and then they saw the movies, and, you know, and there are weird blind spots. Like, there are bands, like, my son, my 20-year-old son, I was talking to him the other day, he didn't know who U2 was.
Oof. What?
No. But they're still around.
He knows
around.
Who Depeche Mode, he knows who Depeche Mode is, who Duran Duran is, he knows who Tommy Two Tones is, you know, but he doesn't know who U2 is, and I'm like, that's a weird blind spot. And I asked my younger son, and I'm like, do you know who U2 is? He's like, no. So both of my sons, neither one knew who U2 was, who to me, as a child of the 80s, you know, they were one of the biggest bands of the 80s. But, you know, I did a little research on this, and it's fascinating. I know it's off topic, but when they did that Red album and it was pushed to all the Apple people, that's when they lost their fan base, because people got pissed.
iPod package, right?
Which one was automatically added, that album?
That was when their entire library came preloaded on the iPod.
Oh, yeah, that was just
so were pissed. Just ridiculous. My sons were pissed, and they were like 10 and 8, and they're like, fuck this band. And they sort – no, seriously. They said fuck this band in their head, and they wrote them out of their mind. And they, and so flash forward 10 years, and I'm like talking to my sons. They don't know who U2 is.
Weird. They're the guys you exiled from your iPod.
That's right.
Like, you know Tommy Two Tone, but you don't know U2. That's weird, right?
8675309. Tommy was baby.
But he was a one hit wonder, right?
Isn't yeah, that what pretty the much.
That
he had?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, or like my sons, they know who the outfield is. Remember that song, Your Love?
Yeah, oh yeah,
Josie Love. You know Josie
on a vacation,
on a vacation far away.
But they don't know you too. Never heard, you know, New Year's Day.
You might have made a good choice there. After all, they after 2000, there's not much to write home about. So,
yeah. But as a formal child of evangelicals, I don't know, Steve. I don't even know if you know this about me, but I was raised by evangelical Christians, and I was not allowed to listen to Christian. I was not allowed to listen to rock music. And the first time I heard U2. U2 was considered a Christian band when they released War and when they released Joshua Tree. So Christians.
Yeah. Good Irish Catholic boys.
Yes, they approve. I'm Irish, but not Catholic. But they did approve that for listening, you know, but they didn't approve anything else. So I knew U2 intimately because it was actually Christian music that didn't suck. No,
that's good.
So
that's funny.
Wasn't Striper.
Oh, Striper, dude. To hell with the devil. Dude, my fraternity actually did security for Striper at a concert.
Oh,
no way.
Oh God.
I shit you not. It's funny you brought that up.
Were they playing a kegger?
It was in Riverside. Cause I did my first 2 years at UC Riverside before I transferred to UCLA. And I would go back to Riverside because that's where I grew up in Redlands, which is pretty close to there. And so all my friends were there. So I'd come out, you know, I went to UCLA to get a degree from there, but UCR was where I hung out with my friends. And Striper played there because they were from that area. The Devil. They did the Bumblebee. And you know who else was from that area was Gwen Stefani.
Huh? Oh, nice.
Grew up in my hood. So, like, Gwen Stefani played at a fraternity party. One of my fraternity parties, yeah.
Jeez.
That was before she hit.
Yeah.
But I remember it, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
All right, you guys want to dive into the movie?
Can I get a refill real quick, yeah. Stevie?
Matt, if you are still listening.
I am still listening.
Okay, you ready to get into your guilty pleasure here?
I love The Hidden Man. I just watched this movie today, so I'm ready to talk about it.
Right. Me too.
So Matt's guilty pleasure is The Hidden.
I want this car.
Jonathan Miller would never do anything to break the law.
I need the keys. Thank you. Bye.
Something strange is happening to some ordinary people.
Homicide for 13 years.
I have never seen anything like this.
You trying to tell me that she's part of this?
Step out of the car, slow.
I want answers, and I want them now.
Explanation won't help you.
Why 3 law-abiding citizens all of a sudden go crazy and start killing people?
I guess a career in the police didn't really prepare you for this, did it?
The Hidden.
You think it's over now? You're wrong.
Directed by Jack Shoulder, running 97 minutes, a string of disconnected killings by seemingly normal people has come to Los Angeles. Lloyd Gallagher, a rogue FBI agent, arrives hot on the killer's trail and enlists the help of a seasoned homicide detective, only he knows more than he is telling. The bodies continue to pile up, and why is it that the FBI agent is the only one who seems to know what's really going on?
Okay, so this movie is essentially the Terminator plot, but a few years before the Terminator came out, and it's Kyle MacLachlan and that guy that was in a lot of late 70s, early 80s films.
Michael Norrie.
Michael Norrie. That you know who I'm talking about. That guy was in a lot of movies.
That guy.
I don't remember. That guy. His name, you know, maybe I was just too young. But I rewatched this film today for the first time in like 20 years. And I tell you, I was a little surprised at some of the stuff in there. And it was, you know, given the, you know, I don't know, the Black Lives Matter and all this stuff going on in our world today. There were just so many cringy moments in that film based on, and I'm just watching this film and I'm like, holy shit. It just makes me realize, like, you know, when I streamed with friends like a few years ago, I'm like, half of these episodes would never even be made today, you know, because they're talking about fat people or talking about gay people or talking about this, that, or the other thing. And we're so politically correct and everything now that a lot of these things would not even be made.
Right.
And so I was watching this, and it was a little cringy, you know. And there were, and it was before all that stuff, because I think Steve, do you know what year the movie came out?
87. Yeah, 1987.
So after
Wasn't
Terminator,
that late in the eight.
Yeah,
after the first Terminator. Yeah,
that actually shocks me. I would have told you I thought that movie came out like. If you'd asked me, I would have said that movie came out like 1981, because one of the things I've noticed about a lot of 70s and 80s films and TV shows is how often like the cop cars look like a million years old. You know, it's like,
yeah,
that's like, holy shit, those cop cars look old. Like every time I go back and rewatch Hill Street Blues, I'm always shocked how like they look like these million year old cop cars, you know?
So what is it originally about this movie, Matt, that, that sent you down the road?
I was a privileged, nerdy white dude, you know? And so awesome cars were cool to me, you know? So, I mean, the fact that they had these weird old guys that were driving around in Ferraris and listening to punk rock or heavy metal, and they were killing people. You know, I saw this movie when I was like 16, you know, I thought it was cool. You know, like,
right.
What is this thing where these guys are doing this thing? And I'd never seen a movie like that before. I mean, I saw They Live like a few months before this, and it was in that vein where I realized, here's this movie that has these weird science fiction elements that really resonate with me, you know? But I really like this movie a lot. I mean, let me clarify, there are some cringy 80s moments in this film.
Oh, sure.
And I don't know if you guys have ever thought about this, but
yeah.
I see this movie. I was shocked when you told me this was 1987, because I just watched this today, and I would swear that all the cop cars were from the 70s. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm kind of tripped out that this is 1987, because it's, you know, that's like late 80s.
Yeah. And I'm like you, I probably hadn't seen the movie in 20 years or so. And we actually watched it last night, and I was actually surprised at how well it held up.
It holds up really well in terms of the plot. You know, I've been watching a TV show called The Strain. Are you guys familiar with it?
Heard yes. Guillermo del Toro, right?
Yeah.
And I really like this show, but I just fucking watched the episode where they ran into the blonde woman who fucked up the internet, and they happened to run into her at, you know, the gas station. And I'm like, really? You know, I mean, one of the number one things I hate about film and television storytelling is how often they have really fucking ridiculously coincidental moments. You know, I mean, this happens all the time. And I can almost tell you, every time I see this in a movie or a TV show, I almost tune out immediately, because I'm like, okay, this is a subpar project. And they did this. And it just seems so stupid to me. I had a hard time getting past that.
Right. Yeah, when you mentioned this movie originally, when we spoke about A Guilty Pleasure, and you brought this up, I thought it was funny, because this is one of those movies that I've been championing since I first saw it back in the late 80s, just because I thought it was a really cool, not cheesy really in any way, just kind of straightforward action film. It does have some of those dated 80s action movie moments. You can't get away from them, but overall I was surprised at how much it held up. I really, it surprised, you know, considering, like you said, with the elements, the visual elements involved that are kind of place it where it is in history, I just felt like this could have come out 10 years ago and it wouldn't have felt much different. I just think it's really well done. I was happily surprised at seeing this again in that period of time, that I wasn't way off base with my original thoughts. Hassan?
I want this car.
Which one? The black Ferrari or the red Mondial?
You'll have to be more specific.
Or the beige Porsche.
I'm just doing his voice. I want this car.
Oh yes. I want this car.
Yeah, it shows it's from 1987, because he blows that guy away in the parking lot, and those other two guys who are getting high on coke, which is very 80s, because the car dealer has complimentary coke for the sale.
Yes, in the trunk of a tiny Ferrari.
Yes, and they don't recognize a gunshot in Los Angeles when they hear it, you know?
Yeah. Backfire.
So, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Backfire. Not one this of yours.
Is,
no,
this
no.
Is yeah, hell no. No, not one of mine. This is obviously in the 80s, okay? Because as far up to 1990, maybe 1995, those guys would have been in a bunker by the time they hit and actually busted into the office. But all right, I haven't seen this movie in a long time. It was one of my favorites when I was a kid, but I hadn't seen it in quite a while. And it is, there's a lot of cringe in it, and there's a lot of 80s tropey stuff all over it. But I mean, that's part of the charm of it for the most part. I forgot how prominently Claudia Christian was in it. You know, I remember her being in it, but I didn't remember her scene being as long as it was. Like part in it being as long as it was. I mean, Chris Mulkey is in it in the very beginning. There's so many people are just in this movie that are just
connection.
Yeah, there's I mean, each of his partners became somebody. I mean, they never got to A-list, but each of his partners, each of his fellow cops became someone more recognizable in subsequent material that came after that, you know?
Yeah, Richard Brooks, that was Edel Ross.
Yeah, uh-huh. It's fantastic. I liked it. It was a fun kind of reminiscing, fun piece of nostalgia. It is, Matt's right, it is a very solidly told story. It's a very well told story. It's basically, you know what it is. I come back to this movie years later knowing exactly that there's an alien in everybody, and it's, you know, he's got a fetish for fast cars and women and drugs and stuff like that. I got it. I remembered it. But I think the way it's the information is given to you, and between Kyle MacLachlan. Kyle MacLachlan does a really good job of being sincere, but while being mysterious at the same time. Like, he's not overtly untrustworthy, you know. Like, especially they do it now. Like, you'll get a couple of guys, and they'll be like, maybe we should check the hospital because something might be there, and it's so obvious that he knows more than he's, you know, and that maybe the director is trying to set up the fact that he might be in on it, or he might be one of the, you know, he might be the twist, or this might be his twisted son or some bullshit like that. But they didn't try to do that, you know. Kyle MacLachlan was like, I can't really tell you. But his reason for not telling is like, once I tell you the story, you're gonna have me locked up, so I can't really. Right. It's not like I can't tell you because you're dumb. Yeah, exactly. I can't tell you because you're dumb, or, you know, because I'm in on it, but I'm not going to tell you because it's the most ridiculous story you've ever heard. Just, you know, once you've seen enough carnage, you'll be in a better place to believe anything that comes out of my mouth. But you have to see this shit to believe it. I can't really come in here and tell you any of this stuff. Even the guy that the main character, what was his name? What's the actor's name?
Michael Norrie.
Michael Norrie. Even the guy, he keeps putting all his work on that guy's desk. The redheaded guy.
Yeah.
Even he's famous. Like, he's been in a ton of stuff that I've seen recently. Like, everybody in that film, like, became somebody more recognizable. So it was a great experience. I had a blast watching it. It's a well-told story. I thought that the ending was a lot more ambiguous than it was when I had first seen it.
Right.
But the scene with his daughter.
Yep.
Where his daughter kind of knows, you ain't my dad.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, because I thought it was more like, did he just give his life energy to him, and that's actually Norrie coming back to life? But no, that guy just took his body, you know, to do right by his family, theoretically to do right by his family.
Yeah.
Right. And it's all a reveal that he too was an alien, you know?
Yeah.
So it was well done. And that grace note at the end with the daughter was a really wonderfully subtle way to show that that our main character is dead and Kyle MacLachlan is hanging out in his body. So, you know, I thought that touch at the end actually elevated the movie for me. So,
well, it was nice because they set that up so nicely early on when he comes over for dinner and meets her, and he looks she's at her and they just and she's just staring at him like, you're not who you say you are.
Yeah, exactly.
And then at dinner he's like, your daughter's very special, and she's like, oh yeah, we like her. It's like, yeah. Like, of course she's special, she's our daughter.
Which is very 80s also. Like, whatever you say, you know, I don't have any, you know. So it was it's strange to look at the 80s as much as the 80s were, especially to people in our age group. It's strange to look at that time and think innocent, you know, like, wow, things were so much more. I mean, it was a lot of stuff happened. That was a lot of the awakening that was a lot of us coming out of the innocence, you know, that we had in prior decades, you know,
right.
And being more aware of, like, you know, certain things like scandals and, you know, corruption, that kind of stuff. And it's a testimony to where we are now to look at that movie and go, well, this is kind of this alien movie where there's a lot of carnage and drug use and car crashes and gun battles with police. This is so quaint, you know, this is such a, you know, a quiet little movie in comparison to, you know, watch John Wick. John Wick kills more people in the first 5 minutes of his movie than that get killed in this movie, you know? So as violent as the movie is, it's kind of tame by our standards today.
Yeah.
But there are certain things, there are some cringy things that happen in that movie, and especially in the light of recent events and stuff. Like, there's that scene where the black DA from Law and Order is, they're like shooting hoops like into the trash can. And I noticed this because I watched this today. And like the white guy, of course, misses the shot into the trash can, but the black guy swishes it. And I'm like, that's the kind of subtle sort of weird racism that is not, you know, and I've been married to two Asian girls. I'm familiar with subtle racism, you know, and my children are half Asian.
Dog whistle.
You know, so it is really interesting when you look at it from sort of that perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not overabundant. It is there, but it's not so overwrought that you can't, like, you kind of just laugh at it. Like, yeah, that's, I get it.
It's funny, when Deirdre and I were watching it, it was like, oh, sure, the black guy's good at basketball.
No, that's exactly what I thought. I'm like, oh, of course, the black guy swishes it, you know? And I'm like, and it's like that negative, it's like that stereotype where, like, can you imagine being the one dumb Asian guy or the one black guy with a really small penis? You know, I mean, it's got to suck, right? You know, I mean, if you have a positive stereotype, it's like it should be good for you. So if you're the one, 1% that's not, that's got to be shitty, I have to say.
Lay.
It's one of my favorite movies from my youth, and I was worried it wouldn't hold up when I watched it today.
What did you give it originally?
I gave it, well, originally, before I changed my rating system, 3.5. And then when I changed it to fourths, I gave it 3 3/4. I thought it was pretty slick. I loved it.
Nice.
So when I watched it today, I was expecting to be let down. Sure. And when I started it, there's this incredibly well-edited knockdown car chase at the beginning of this movie that holds up extremely well, as well as a unique opening shot from a security camera that I can't remember in any movie before this one.
Right.
And I love both of those. So right off the bat, I'm like, wow, this is as good as I remember. For those moments that you're saying are cringeworthy, like the basketball shooting scene in the office, I didn't view it. I mean, obviously when I saw it, I'm like, okay, someone's going to bitch about that. But I didn't view it in that context. I viewed it more as the camaraderie between the police officers in their boring little office where they have to file paperwork. And I figured that's exactly something that would happen. And I don't know. It didn't bother me as much when I saw that. And there's a few other moments too, but that's the one that stuck out the most. I think there's great minimalist dialogue in this between the two leads and everyone else. There's very little exposition. And if you haven't seen it before, you don't really know what's going on. You know, it progresses as the movie goes. And then finally, even when Kyle MacLachlan reveals what's going on and he locks them up, you still don't have the full story. And I think they work well together as a pair, Michael Norrie and MacLachlan. Did you guys catch Danny Trejo?
It was Danny.
Yes, who was in The Prisoner. He was awesome.
In the jail. That was kind of cool.
That was Danny Trejo's fifth acting role.
Wow. Okay.
Fifth.
Yeah.
Very cool. Here is an awesome thing to say about that. I ate tacos at Danny Trejo's taco place today.
Oh, yeah. I've been dying to get there every time I've been to LA recently.
Oh, that's awesome.
Steve, next time you're here, you got to call me, dude. I'll order. We'll hang out at my place because those tacos are so good. Awesome.
We went over the movie Heat a few weeks back, and we talked about Danny Trejo and how he has currently on IMDb. He is sitting at 383 acting credits, and he didn't start acting until he was in his 30s.
Amazing.
How old is he now?
I believe he might have just turned 70.
70. Wow, he looks great. Yeah.
Wow.
Go ahead, Lay.
Not much else. It didn't lose anything for me when I watched it. I mean, good. It's very well edited. The sound effect editing is great. One of the laugh out loud favorite scenes is when he aims the bazooka at the jail cell. I mean, that's just great. I mean,
it's good. That is cinema gold.
It's clear that the director was, he wasn't throwing this away. He tried to make it as legitimate as possible. Yeah. And it's not a throwaway. I mean, I understand it being a guilty pleasure, but it's not a throwaway movie to me. I think it's an underrated film from the 80s.
Absolutely.
That scene where Kyle comes in with the flamethrower. I love how they set it up with the one quick scene earlier in the film.
Yeah.
It's so innocuous. But then when you see him running in, you're like, oh, shit, he's done. He's going to end this. I mean, that's pretty shocking for a human being to walk into some place
and light a guy on fire,
hosing down some guy right. with a flamethrower. And a senator to be, no less, or whatever. Yeah. I mean, that's when I saw that, I was like, oh shit, here he comes. And that was great. And that was, it's an R-rated film, but that was like, okay, now you have this burnt corpse on the stage of someone who is just running for an elected position. And I love that.
Yeah.
And then the last
president.
Thing I'll say is Claudia Christian's dress. So,
yeah.
Wow. No, and look, that one of the reasons why I mentioned this movie, The Hidden, and it falls into a line with a few other films like Highlander and They Live, is there's no and Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan, is there are no setups. There are no setups that are not paid off. Mm. And as a writer, and I've written TV, and I worked on the Power Rangers and I wrote episodes where then the episode comes out and I'm watching it and it's like nothing like what I wrote. But I still see teleplay by my name and I'm like, what the fuck? and it's good when it's better. It's bad when it's worse. Right. I look at writers on bad films. I'm always like, okay, are there 3 writers, 5 writers, right, or 12 writers? Right. And like when you look at a movie like, I'm trying to think right now. What was that really bad movie with all the dragons that came out and it was supposed to spawn like multiple sequels,
Rain
but only
fire.
The first movie. What is it
Rain
called?
Of Fire?
No, neither one of those. It was Erasure. Or I know Erasure was a bad 80s band.
No, yeah.
They weren't bad.
But Aragon.
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 That's it. Aragon. Okay. You nailed it. Aragon was this film that came out. And it was so fucking stupid. And like, it was such a ripoff of Star Wars and the whole plot and all these sort of hero's journey things. And it was so mishandled. And I love the end of this film. And you guys should go rewatch Aragon just for this reason alone. They leave it on the ultimate cliffhanger that never gets paid off.
Oh,
unreal.
Because there's no sequel. They leave it on this ultimate cliffhanger that never gets paid off, and I love
it. It's like if they had stopped making Star Wars movies after Empire.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? I mean, dude, brother and sister, or are they fucking? This is what we got to know.
Right.
Important things we got to know,
So just a couple of quick facts about The Hidden. So Michael Norrie turned down the part of Martin Riggs in Lethal Weapon.
Wow.
So this was Kyle MacLachlan's third acting role after Dune and Blue Velvet.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't remember Blue Velvet.
Things did not take off for Kyle. I do remember that story.
Yeah.
I do remember everyone expected him to do more.
Well, Blue and, Velvet was, yeah.
He was in Twin Peaks and he was in Friends. What more do you want?
Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
He was Desperate Housewives.
Sex and the City.
He was in three of the four. Okay, you're proving my point. He's been in four of the biggest transformational TV series the last 30 years.
TV is today. So the fact that he started off in movies and moved to TV was at the time an indication that his star had fallen a little bit.
Right.
Today, a superstar could do a Netflix TV show nothing happens to him. Yeah, exactly. Same. But back then it was a big step down.
Yeah. I think Showgirls ended his movie career. So.
Oh boy.
Oh man.
The original ending had the senator getting away.
Really?
That would have sucked.
Yeah, I agree.
What, crawling as a burnt corpse off the stage?
Yeah, well, maybe he didn't quite get his toasty.
His head pulls itself off and crawls away with spider legs.
I have a list of actors who were considered at the time in 1986 when they were going to shoot this movie. This list is pretty much every actor who was working in film at that time.
And Michael Norrie won out.
Wow. And Michael Norrie won out.
Good choice.
I'm sure it was a legitimate, legitimate gambit, and he actually just beat them all out with his superior acting. And it wasn't because they couldn't get any of those other guys, because
or they were all busy.
Yeah.
Or wouldn't pick up the phone.
And yeah, exactly.
And in 1987, he was a bigger actor. That's the thing, is if you look at his IMDb career, he's had some big films. That guy's been in a lot of movies that you know. And I've seen it's
him
weird.
I definitely recognized him the minute I saw him.
So two small fun science fiction reference bits in this film.
74 now.
Yeah. In one, in the jail sequence, when the two aliens are talking to each other, and they mention an event on Altair, that is a reference to Altair 4 from Forbidden Planet.
Sweet.
And okay. I don't know if any of you guys picked this up. I obviously did because I'm a lunatic about this film. In the anchor import scene, when the guy is rolling around on the ground because he's having indigestional issues.
Yeah.
And the tentacle pops out of his arm.
Yeah.
Did you notice the sound effect?
No.
It's from The Thing.
Oh, well.
They use the sound of the alien sound from the kennel sequence in The Thing.
I love that movie so much.
Yeah, so does Steve.
I mean, I really had to think about when you were talking about the guilty pleasure movie when I mentioned The Hidden. I actually thought about The Thing, and I thought about a couple other movies too, and I picked The Hidden because I figured it was one that other people wouldn't think about.
Let's go down the tubes.
And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
All right, so we're going to start off here with
The Hidden.
And The Hidden. These are there's only six or seven of these, but they're all pretty fun. So this is the standard USA release. Is the poster image everybody knows, it was all the video boxes.
Yeah, I loved it. I love that poster. That's
yeah.
It makes that's, me it's remember the movie.
Next is the Thailand poster.
Oh boy!
Not
kind of gives it away.
Not giving away too much at all. You have him on his knees with the flamethrower. You have the guy with the thing coming out of his arm. I mean, you have
here are 10 plot points. Enjoy. Including the
but
main
you know what?
One.
In fact,
but you know what's funny
in
though
fact,
is
go home. You've already seen the
right,
movie.
But it's funny though. Put thrown at you in this manner, you're still not going to understand.
Not the first time you see it. No, that's true.
That's true.
That's true. That's so true. You know, in fairness, it's such a crazy movie. Who gives a fuck?
But the alien parasite kind of is a really big reveal.
It's early in the movie, though, right?
Yeah.
Not really.
Yeah, it is. Because it's in the hospital. Yeah, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, when he moves from
DeVries to
right
Miller.
After the car chase.
All right, fair.
Right.
But still, it's still a reveal. You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is in this. So
yeah. Next is Spain.
What the hell?
Yeah. Actually.
Okay.
Not offensive.
Yeah. That's cool.
And then
cool style.
You want to talk about plot point giveaways. So in Italy they just called the movie La Alieno. Oh, okay.
I mean, again, you realize it 20 minutes in, but or 15 or whatever, but
yeah.
But you know, I mean, this they want to bring the sci-fi people to the movie. What's going on with the dude in the window?
Yeah, I don't know guy? If it's Elvis or Nightwing. I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like Nightwing.
A Power Ranger or something.
Can't hear. Next is Japanese.
Yep. This reminds Japanese. Me of Heat somehow.
Or yeah, a little bit.
I love the dog. That's great.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, roof.
I totally forgot about that point in the movie. Yeah. That was hysterical when that happened.
The best is the three different shots they coaxed out of the dog when they needed him to growl, needed him to look around the corner. It probably took like an hour to get that shot, but they got it.
I like when they throw it at the guy who's in front of the refrigerator.
Yeah. The only way and that dog could
somehow Somehow that almost kills him.
Yeah,
right? He's internally bleeding.
Knocks him out.
It's like, internally it's bleeding like if you've from ever his
hit
mouth.
Your head ever. On a refrigerator, upper refrigerator door before. It's like it doesn't even hurt. It's like let alone knock you out. Next is from Finland.
I mean, they focused on the guy who has the alien in him probably the least.
But he was the most pivotal.
Yeah, yeah, he was also
the whole scene.
The one from the main poster as well.
Yeah, no, you're right. And actually, he does have it for the whole finale scene. So,
next is a beautiful poster from Ghana.
Okay.
Oh man.
And so let me. I've got the story on the Ghana and the Ghanaian posters. So what the deal is since they didn't have movie theaters in Ghana, what they had was these places, these trucks would drive around to these small villages with screens on the back of them. And they would project movies on these screens. And they were like these mobile movie clubs, essentially. And what would happen is they would hire local artists to paint posters for the upcoming films. And so local artists would just paint these posters based on what they knew of the movie, but they didn't always know that much about the movie.
Yeah, no, this one, they got Hulk barfing up a cop. And being swallowed by Gene Simmons. And meanwhile,
yeah,
this girl's got a grenade in her fucking hand.
Looks like Toshiro Mifune holding a machine gun and a grenade.
That supposed to be Claudia Christian, like a really roughly drawn 40 years down the line.
I don't know what that is.
This is just so good.
I want to do a show sometime on just Ghana movie art.
Because
awesome. there are some absolute treasures out there, believe me. So next is the one fan art poster I was able to find by James Ream Davis.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I like this.
Pretty good.
Yeah. At least they got Nori in there.
Yeah, finally, right?
Yeah, right?
What's in the upper left corner? That's
that's the burned that's Mulky.
Oh. Barfing up the bug.
Barfing up the bug.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Without actually showing the bug.
Right. Claudia Christian, just you can paint her any way you want, man.
Right. So here's a funny thing I read about that her in my research for this. So she said that the producers of the film weren't all that impressed with her attributes.
Dancing.
Wow.
And felt alive. That would, which is why they were showcasing her butt in that, in the outfits that they had her in, because they felt that her butt was better than her, you know, the back was better than the front. Wow. And I'm like, what?
That's like, hi. It was the 80s.
I know.
Everything was about breasts in the 80s.
It's all about
her front
boobs.
Shots are completely fine.
Exactly. So, oh, and another fun thing, fun fact, apparently when during one of the gun battle sequences, a piece from one of the prop blanks flew out of the gun and scratched her cornea.
Wow.
Oh. And so for the rest of her, ever since then, and especially on Babylon 5, which I won't know because I never saw Babylon 5, but apparently every time since then she's had to fire a gun in a movie, she always turns away when she shoots. Which people on Babylon 5 thought was very funny because the guns didn't actually shoot because all the effects were put in post later. So she was just like bang, bang. And, you know, apparently that was enough to, do what needed to be done.
Sure she wasn't compensated for that, so I don't blame her.
Yeah, probably not. You guys got anything else you want to throw out there today?
I'm good.
No, this was I enjoyed both movies, so I'm happy. I'm happy that those were the assignments.
Those are fun to watch.
Indeed. Thanks to Purple Planet Music. Get your own awesome theme music at purple-planet.com. Please check out our website at cinementalpod.com for all of the poster images that we discuss on our Down the Tube segments. And don't forget to download and subscribe to Cinemental wherever you enjoy your podcasts. You can always listen to new episodes at cinementalpod.com. Also, you can follow us on all major social media accounts at cinementalpod. For Matt Hawkins, Hassan Godwin, Latham Conger III, and myself, we say thank you so much for listening. And as always, in the words of our friend and mentor, Truman Burbank.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.